Hi, I'm Stephanie, a grateful recovering alcoholic. I said, you know, the good thing about doing this is makes you more aware of the steps. You know, in your program a long time, and I always say I tried to learn to live the steps. And by doing this, it really brings it home every time. And like eight and nine are very aligned with four and five. In four, we made a list of what our wrongdoings were and for ourselves. And I've made many lists over the years of things that perk up. And five, I admitted to another person and to God, and I have taken care of that. And I still do that. I have a spiritual director, one of the priests, and I told you he was Father Ray, that was chaplain at Serenity years ago. And he's familiar with the program. And eight tells me that make a list of the persons I had harmed or what I had done. And in my drinking, I always say that when my family, I don't know that they were even aware that I had a problem, because I only went home once a year, and I really didn't drink much. If they had a party with people visiting, maybe I drank. And I can remember my aunt saying something to me one time, "Do you think you drink a little too much?" And I said, "Well, I'll kind of cool it." But that's all she ever said. And nothing else was ever said to me about my drinking when I visited them. I went to the people, I drank in the neighborhood. When our rules changed, you know, we were allowed to start going out. And I remember the neighbors, the little German lady across the street. Well, she'd come to my to our garden and plant her stuff in my garden. And I'd have, between tomatoes, I'd have peppers. Sometimes I'd have something else. And I'd think, where'd this come from? Well, she had been in the garden. Well, she always told me to come over at 4 o'clock and have a beer. And so when I went to rehab, when I came back, I did visit her and tell her that, you know, I now don't drink anymore. And I thanked her for all the beers I did drink from her. I didn't offer to pay for them because I didn't have that kind of money. But she said to me, "I'm happy that you're not drinking, but I'm sorry I don't have a friend to drink with." So I made restitution there. And the other guy was a guy across the street that I visit them. And he just was so happy that I was getting help. He realized that I was drinking more than I should have. And they were the ones that witnessed the night that I had the accident. I was having a meeting, and you heard this before, and I worked with the diocese, and this night we were having a meeting of scheduling all these schools that were involved in bringing children that were hearing impaired for class, and rearranging with the buses and so on. And it was the best meeting I ever had. It worked out well. The priest that was supposed to be there called me the night before and said he wasn't going to be there, canceled. I said, "I'm not canceling." Now, I've been drinking. So I said, I'm not canceling. So we had a wonderful meeting, and of course, I had an ulterior motive to serve cheese and crackers and wine or beer, whatever they wanted. Well, what they didn't polish off, I did. And so then I could have walked across the parking lot to my secretary, who worked at the rectory. I got in a car, and I thought I was on the brakes and I was on the gas. And I went through a wrought iron fence. So I made that restitution very quickly because we got the car out, the car was okay, went to the garage the next day, and they said there's nothing wrong with the car. The fence was bent. It was a wrought iron. So I went to Father and I said, I didn't have much money, but I had a little bit. And I said, you know, I want to make restitution for damaging your fence. He said, don't worry about it. He said, insurance will cover it. But I did try to make restitution. Then I had another friend and I used to take care of her. And when I look back now, she bought a case of beer every week because I drank it all, 24 bottles. I was there for over the weekend. And I tried to make restitution with her. These people now are all dead. And she died prior to me going to rehab. So how I try to make restitution to her is that I try to have a mass set for her once a year on her anniversary. And by now I have paid for all the beer, I think. And then to the people that I lived with, there were only three nuns and they were aware of my shenanigans. So when I came back, they were just glad that I had gotten help. And in a lot of cases, I think families are relieved that we're doing something about our disease. And so after a while, after I was in the fellowship, it was about a couple months later, we all had to move because the priest wanted to use the building for something else. So I went to each one of them and I said, you know, that I'm sorry for the behavior. The behavior was, I didn't want you to bother me anymore. If they were going out somewhere, I don't want to go with them. I didn't want to be with them. Because I didn't know if I'd get a beer if I was with them. I didn't know what I'd get. So I always said, I'm not going tonight. I'm not going today. I'm not going to do that. I began to isolate. And I'm not a person who likes to isolate. And so I went to there were two left, and I went to them and I, you know, told them that I'm, you know, sorry for the behavior, and you know, anything I caused, and they said, oh, we're just glad you're doing something, you're going to the meetings. And then over the years, and I still see them, over the years, as something crops up in my head, I do try to go and say something to them. I think that, and then made direct amends to those people. There probably are people that I cannot make, they died. A lot of them have died. And so the only way that I can make amends to anybody is to pray for them. And, just live the life I'm leading today. I think that we repeat a lot. The steps tell us that we have to be always on our guard of living a life that should be lived properly. Even today, you know, I live with 60-some women, and I was just telling them, today, we call our convent a mother house. We don't call it a mother house, it's CLC, Living Center. It's Motel 6. And I happen to be in charge of housekeepers, in which I fired one yesterday. So I had only one today. I have three, but I only had one today because the other one had asked to be off. And I would not deny her because she's so good. So anyway, one of the guest rooms had to be getting ready for the weekend. And the kid would be by herself, so I had all the laundry done, everything done. And this little nun that lives in my apartment's very nosy, very, very nosy. I'm surprised she hasn't asked me why I'm out every Thursday night. But that hasn't happened yet. She hasn't realized that. But she was standing by the door. The door of the room was open. And she stood, and she stood, and she stood, and she looked. And I really wanted to go up to her and say, what is wrong? Is something not done right? But I didn't. I let her gawk and look at it and go our merry way. But I have to, even in my job, you know, I have to always remember that I have to keep control of myself, my behaviors. I could get, when I was drinking, I'd be angry. I'd be angry at some kid for something they did, or some person, some teacher. Today, I try to think it through before I even act, instead of react. This taught me through this fellowship, behaviors. Keep my mouth shut. It's better to listen. Anyway, if you don't keep your mouth shut, they interpret wrongly what you said. And sometimes you're in the middle of something you didn't even know you were part of. So I try to do that. I try to be. And today, even like I said, the people I have harmed, a lot of them are dead. The woman I bought the case of beer, she died before I went into rehab. She died long before that. My family's dead, all my aunts, but they, like I said, I don't know how much they were aware, but my behavior could have been indicative of something wasn't right. And it's important to live, and living one day at a time. You know, you get up in the morning and you think, you know, there's, you look ahead, you don't look too far ahead, because if you do, you'll get squirrely. You think, I think what's ahead of me that day, and I try to take it piecemeal, because it'll work out. It'll work out. And I don't have to get rattled. I know people get rattled about stuff. And I said to me, doesn't that bother you? Aren't you bothered by this or that? I said, why? How do I know how it'll be later? We had what we call the new administration, and we had meetings all year. And they'd be all upset about something. Well, aren't you going to say anything about it? To the right person, I will. But why should I get all bent out of shape? It's not going to help me. This program taught me these behaviors. I still sometimes get a little ruffled, but not like I used to. It taught me, this program teaches us a way to live. And I always prided myself on being a pretty nice person. But when I look back, I like myself better today. And I know that I can help more people today. The other day, I didn't go to work on Tuesday. I went Monday and forgot to tell my cronies that I went see them Tuesday. I'm chaplain at St. Mary's Home. And there are a lot of special people there. So when I came in on Wednesday, the lady at the desk said, your friends aren't too happy with you today. I said, why? Well, you didn't tell them you weren't going to be there on Tuesday. I said, I forgot, because I had a hair appointment and I forgot to tell him I wasn't going to come in. So I had to tell him that, I'm sorry, I forgot to tell you I wasn't going to be in today. Well, we have to know, we were worried about you. I said, well, you have my phone number. Well, they said, yeah, I forgot to use that. But they are cute, you know, they're cute. And, you know, when people want to be around you, that says something. There were times, like I said, at the end of my drinking, I isolated. I didn't want to be around those nuns. I didn't want to do anything they did. And once in a while, when I see them and something pops up that I remember, now it's a long time to remember, almost 36 years, I'll say something to them. But you know, the attitude of the people we go to, they don't make a big deal out of it. They say, well, we're glad that you're doing something, that you're improving, that you're being what you ought to be. They don't put you down. I think the fear we get is, what are they going to say of what I did? Like when I had the checkbook, I had it all messed up. I was drunk all the time. I couldn't even read what I wrote. But this nun took it and got it fixed up, and I told her when I got sober, I'm so sorry about the mess of the checkbook. Or if, you know, anything, if I ruined the rug by my spilling my wine, I cleaned it up, but, you know, I tell them I'm sorry. Today I may try to make, to say, if I do something wrong or I hurt somebody's feelings, I try to, that's still hard though, but I try to apologize and say, you know, I'm really sorry that I said that. Or we have a lot of sensitive people, and one day one of them came to the table and I was just joking. And she said, can I sit there? I said, no. So I had to go back to her later and I said, I didn't mean that. You know I was only kidding you. I said, I'm the first one to tell you. There are no names on any chairs or any place at the table, because that aggravates me. Some people, well, I remember when I was working at the old mother house and I would have programs in the evening, I would stay for supper. And I can remember going to the dining room and no matter what table I thought I could sit at, no. I mean, this shocked me, our own nuns. No, you can't sit here, so-and-so sits there. And finally, I went to a table where there were a couple older nuns. Come on, Stephanie, you can sit here. But it kind of horrified me that that was a behavior. And at the new mother house, when people come in and say, can I sit here? I always say I don't see a name on the place. I don't see a name. Yeah, you can sit here. But there are a few that I kind of shy. One told me, don't ever sit with me because you don't have much to say. She's bipolar. So I understand. So I never rock the cradle. I don't go near. I talk to her, hello and that, but I will not sit with her. And some will, but they've been thrown out too. We laugh when they get, I mean, we're not laughing because they got thrown out. But they said to me, you're a smart one. I said, I learned a long time ago. But those are things that I think those behaviors, I don't have to do that. I don't have to make people feel they're not welcome. I need to make them feel welcome. And, but anyway, I try to every day, if I do something wrong, hurt, you know, I go back to the person and say, I didn't mean that. Or, you know, what can I do to help you, or so on. Life's too short. And so I'm still working. I'll probably go to the grave with things I forgot to say to people. I probably will go to the grave. I try to remember all the people I affected. The major things I did, I didn't kill anybody, thank God. I could have. I drove drunk. I could have, because when I took the kids home that helped me, I wasn't feeling bad. I had a snickful. I could have killed somebody. So I thank God every day. I don't want to go back to that kind of life. I have no desire, and with the grace of God and prayer every day, I have a good life. And and because of this program, I have too much to do. Somebody said, I was counting all the jobs you have. I said, don't count them. They just get done. This weekend's another, you know, we get one room ready and there's another room. We have a big apartment and that's going to get used just for overnight. And I can't change it though. And we have guests for the Jubilee that's coming up. But and I work with my staff is wonderful. We had a fire one. I found out, we did it yesterday morning. The call-offs that she had, I had a sheet full. And the other two workers said, where would you work that anybody would put up with this? Kept giving her a chance. Well, I found out that she was doing the front hall and that she was doing the desk, where the telephone, where the consoles are, all that are. Well, we also sell candy bars, like they do at St. Mary's Home. And we have those Be Kind stickers, and there's money there. And then we have a little gift shop, and the bag of money's there. And somebody, thank God, somebody happened to see her working around the desk, taking the money. So that was the last straw. She had a lot of chances. I feel bad it happened that way, but we had to let her go. So, did I ever steal money? Probably from the kitty at convent, if I needed it. I have to think of, and every day I try to remember, you know, if something comes to my mind to say, you know, that I'm sorry for the way I acted. Mainly mine was acting, you know, being snippy and sometimes angry with a teacher because I was principal. But when I went for help and came back, they were so happy that I had gotten help. And, you know, but I continued to get help by going to these meetings. I have to laugh. I was telling Brenda, this nun that kind of likes to know everything, she hasn't said anything to me about the last six meetings, Thursdays, I've been out of the house, because she kind of looks around to see where I am. So I haven't heard a word. I don't think she's aware that I'm not home. I haven't heard her yet. Maybe I'll hear tonight, where have you been? But one day I was coming in the house, and she was going down the hall, and she said, are you going out? Well, if I'm coming in the door, I'm not going out. And I wanted to say that to her, you know, be a smart mouth. But see, through this program, I'm trying to be much more diplomatic. I said, no, I just came home. So I really don't have much more to say, but I want to thank you. Now it's time for...
Thank you, Sister Stephanie. Now we have questions and answers. Anyone have a question? Please? I'll pick somebody.
Hi, Marion, alcoholic. Thanks, Stephanie. When you were doing your eight step, were you told at the time to divvy it up like into three columns now, later, probably never?
And it what?
Well, you know, when you make your list of people that you're going to make amends to, I was told, like, divide them into three columns.
Uh-huh.
Do it now, not ready now, but later, and then probably never. I'm just curious, when you came into the program and you were doing your steps, were you told to do it that way, and is that?
No, my sponsor just said, when you had the opportunity, do it. And right from the beginning, I went back to the convent. Of course, those nuns were there. And, you know, I told them that I was sorry that I did the things I did and ignored them and didn't want to be part of it.
Okay. Hi, Albert, alcoholic. What was the toughest amends you had to make?
Pardon?
What was the toughest amends you had to make in your list?
Top of the men's?
Toughest. I dog very fast, sorry. Hardest, the hardest.
The hardest one? Probably when I screwed up the checkbook and, you know, used some of the money that I shouldn't have used.
Been there.
Yeah. Anybody else?
Hi, Tom, alcoholic.
Hi, Tom.
You mentioned the number of people who you approached and they were just happy that you were getting help. I had very similar thing happen with quite a few people. However, I also have experienced some lingering guilt over the fact that, especially with my family, they would not accept the financial restitution that I owe them. And it's just one of those things. What advice would you have for dealing with that?
Like I said, I couldn't pay it all back, but I like if they're Catholic and they're dead, I have a mass said for them. I offered the financial, like for the beer, as much as I could pay back. But they didn't want it. They said, we're happy. You're doing what you're doing. And you're in the same boat. Just do something kind for them. Surprise them with something. Maybe they need something. Maybe you need to help them do something in their house. That kind of stuff. Like a lot of times, you know, I get stuck doing stuff that I don't like to do. You know, we have to set tables for Jubilees, and that'll come up on Saturday. And working with nuns, this one will put something down, and somebody will say, that's not the way it goes. And that's not the way it goes. And a lot of times, I just want to walk out, because I don't want that. I don't want to be part of it. However, then I think, that's a way to show my way of giving back what I didn't do when I should have. So I just put up with it and just do it. I remember we had a big celebration, and I came home from a meeting, and I had the goblets on, and all the silverware was backwards. So when I came in, because I was the last kid on the block coming in, I decided to rearrange the silver correctly. I caused a war. So I walked out, because they didn't realize they had done it wrong. And I thought, if people come in here from the outside that know something about setting table, they're going to be saying, what's the matter with these nuns? So finally, another nun came back to me, and she said, when everybody left, we went back and redid the silver so it would be in the proper order. I mean, it was a riot, because they didn't know how to do it. But doing things for, you know, can make up for going out of your way. A lot of times I don't feel like doing something, and then I do it. That's kind of way I make restitution. So.
Anyone else?
And I still write out, if I remember something of the persons that are gone, I write it out and tear it up. But I feel better. And God has forgiven us a long time ago. We rehash a lot. And that God doesn't want us to. He wants us to walk the path we're walking right now.
So I'm just curious. I'm Brenda Alcoholic. So I have made amends to my mom, mostly by my actions more than anything else, because I've been able to be the kind of daughter she should have had a long time ago. So do you think she's in hospice right now, she doesn't know a lot, but do you believe that they are also aware of the compassion and understanding that we have for them and the love, that it's kind of like an amend, so to speak?
Oh, it is.
Because I feel that way too, and I sense that, and I just wondered if you felt the same way, that God has a way of delivering those messages even when you can't speak back.
Yeah, when I was in the infirmary, I had some cantankerous patients. And instead of getting angry at them, I treat them, you know, really nice, even though they were belting me. I got belted a couple times. But that was another way of me treating them that I should be treating them that way. I had one that, I went to the nun that was doing this. When they would have parties or anything, she got like a jar like this and fill it up with wine, if we had wine at a party. And she'd fill it up. And then I found out the next day, that jar went to this patient. Well, one day she comes out and she falls and cracks her head. Well, you know, who has to go to the hospital with her? And of course she has a cracked head because she's been drinking. So I went to the other sister and I said, please do not give her those jars of wine, because she's falling and cracking her head. She did it twice. But I was always nice to her. I didn't get mad at her. I didn't like to have to go to the hospital at 3 p.m. and sit in the emergency room till they stitch her up, because you know what those emergency rooms are like. But now I would think, this is my way of giving back. We have all kind of ways of making restitution. And I think, like you, Brenda, I tell you all the time, you're very, very good to your mother. And we need to, we pay back that way and treat them. And a lot of times, I know it can be aggravating, you know, because they get, I had one, she was awful. She's sitting and we were waiting for the wheelchair ambulance and she had a veil on and I'm here, she's here, I'm here, and there's a gentleman here. And we're waiting and all of a sudden she screams at the guy next to me. And I'm trying to, be very gentle about it. And I said, be quiet. What'd you say? I said, I told you to be quiet. So when she got home, I said, if you act like this again, I'm not taking you. And somebody looked at me and said, you're it. Nobody else will take her. Well, the next day she had to go to another doctor and I couldn't take her because I was going to hospital with somebody else. And this nun took her and she came home with her and she looked at me and she said, Stephanie, don't you ever ask me to take her again. I said, what'd she do? She said, I'm not telling you. I'm so angry. To this day, I don't know what she did. But she died while I was on retreat and I kind of felt bad. And she was one of these bell ringers. She rang her bell for everything. Turned my clock, opened my window, closed my window, pulled the shades. So one day I went charging down and I said, okay, this is it. You ring that bell one more time, I'm taking it out of here. So for 2 days, she didn't bother with the bell. After that, they said, we're back at it. So anyway, yeah, you, there are different ways we could do that. Go out of your way, somebody needs a ride. That's a big one. That's a big one. Helping people. So.
Anybody else? All right, well, thank you.
You're welcome.